Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 48. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, Mike Mercer, Executive Director of the Northwest Earth Institute. If you're new to this podcast and would like more information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue after the interview. Northwest Earth Institute believes that change starts with you. You create transformative change when you share learning, stories, and challenges with your community, whether on the bus, in the pew, at class, or at work. Create your community of change. Northwest Earth Institute creates courses and programs that help us do that.
When Alternatives had its bookstore, we worked with the Northwest Earth Institute, for 15 years ago. And it was interesting because we wanted to sell their books, but they wouldn't let us sell their books because they have a different business model, one which I very much respect, and that is to create courses and to create discussion groups. So, Mike Mercer, talk to me about how Northwest Earth Institute was founded and where the incentive for this particular type of business model came from.
Sure. So, the Northwest Earth Institute was founded in 1993 by Dick and Jean Roy. And the mindset really was around, we know that change needs to occur on a lot of fronts. It needs to occur in the policy front. It needs to occur on the technology front. It needs to occur at a level of market forces. But what we really need in addition to that is people thinking differently about their place on this planet and the actions that they're taking. So the mindset was, you know, how do we bring people together to really create a shift in behavior, moving from kind of closing the gap between the things that people say they should be doing, as I should be, eating more organically, or but not buying not as much, or taking alternative forms of transportation. And you look at the numbers of people that were saying, you know, I should be doing these things, and then the percentage of people that actually follow through on those actions, it was a pretty significant gap. So our work is really is designed around how do we help close the gap in a way that's not prescriptive, where we're telling people what they must do. It's not judgmental based on the actions that they're currently taking, and realizing that we're all in a different place along this continuum of change, and wherever you're starting is the right place to start, and we'll move forward from there. So I can add just a brief bit just also about our model for change is this idea of shared discovery, which is you've kind of alluded to, is people coming together to have a dialogue where we learn from each other. This idea of personal reflection, as we tie back to the values that we hold without us trying to change values, is how do we connect to our altruistic values, our social norming values, our enlightened self-interest values to create change, and then in the end we actually have to take action. And so it's really a closed loop. As we start to take action, that then supports more shared discovery and more personal reflection and hopefully more action. So that's a little bit of our model.
Excellent. Well, I don't want to give people the wrong impression. When I use the term business model, you are a non-profit organization. So people can contribute to Northwest Earth Institute?
Actually, we are a non-profit. We're actually housed here in Portland, and this is where we started. However, about, I'd say, maybe 10% or so of our work is here, 10 to 15% of our work is here in Portland, and the rest is distributed throughout the rest of the country.
Yes, and you are really a national organization, possibly international. I know that you have what you might call beta testing sites in various places, so you don't just publish things and shove it out the door. You have groups around the country who test these courses before they're offered to the general public.
Yeah, that's a good observation. We're not actually a service provider on our own, with the exception of just a few courses that we offer, and then our Eco Challenge. But for the most part, we provide services and solutions to higher education communities. So faculty might use our discussion courses as part of their curricula, and so that rather than it being a taught from the front of the classroom, it's really a student-led dialogue around these issues. We also work with the business community who are saying, hey, we want to integrate sustainability principles into our employee engagement efforts here in the workplace. And so they'll be engaging larger numbers. So, for instance, we're working with Intel, and we've worked with Bank of America and other organizations who are trying to engage larger numbers of their employees around sustainability. What does it look like both at the personal level but also at the organizational level? And then working with any groups, whether it's faith groups or neighborhoods, or we tend to look where do people naturally gather, and that's a great place for us to be involved.
Well, now, Northwest Earth Institute is not specifically faith-based, if I'm correct. I mean, you deal with the general public.
Correct, correct. And we work with the faith community, but, it's really on their own accord.
Now, do you have speakers from the staff, or are any speakers are volunteers from the community?
We don't really do a great deal of speaking. We have a number of, we've just recently started doing some webinars, either related, but primarily those are focused on how to organize groups, what are the premises behind the programs that we offer, or if I want to put on an eco challenge, how do I do that, or how do I organize some folks to come together for a dialogue. And in some, again, I mentioned earlier, in a couple of small cases, we're starting to do some webinars where we are actually leading a discussion course with the public online. It's not necessarily the model we've moved to. It's just something we're testing out at this time to see if providing it in a different vehicle is effective.
Well, one of the reasons that we caught your interest in your group was because you were issuing a course on voluntary simplicity. And so that was really of interest to us with Simple Living. But you have a wide variety of courses. I think the latest one is called Choosing for Change, Sustainability or Climate Change Solutions. So tell us a little bit about the range of your courses. So there must be a couple dozen of them now, and specifically about the latest one.
Well, I'm actually glad we don't have a couple of dozen, because it takes a lot of time and energy to keep those up. As you know, the data is changing pretty drastically, particularly as it relates to climate. So right now I think we have 9 different discussion courses, and they range from the course you referenced here, which is called Change is Our Choice, Creating Climate Solutions. And then we have a couple of courses on food. We have an umbrella course, Choices for Sustainable Living. So it looks at everything from what is sustainability to food to transportation, economy. And then we have a course on World of Health. It's just really focused on that link between health and sustainability. Recently released last year a course called Seeing Systems, Peace, Justice, and Sustainability. So looking at that kind of overlap between environmental sustainability, social sustainability, and how peace all tie together. So, and then you already mentioned voluntary simplicity, and then reconnecting. It used to be called deep ecology. Now I missed the name right off the top of my head, but reconnecting with Earth. And that's the range of courses that we're offering. So, and I'm happy to talk a little bit more about Change is Our Choice if you'd like to do that for a moment.
Sure. Glad to. What's interesting to me, though, is you don't publish things on paper much anymore. By publishing it as a PDF document so people can download it off the internet, then you can do updating, which is hard to do when you print things on paper.
Well, yeah, and actually all of our courses, with the exception of this latest one, actually are available in paper. We try to keep a relatively small inventory so that not anything longer than a couple of years. But this new course is Changes Our Choice. We did decide to only offer it as a electronic course, and we did that for a couple of reasons. One, I think, as you've already alluded to, is that the climate change information is altered pretty much from day to day to day, and so putting anything in print, it kind of immediately it's outdated. So we decided to keep it electronic so we can keep it up to date a little more frequently. The other thing we tried to do with Changes Our Choice is to offer it really as a multimedia approach, realizing that there are different learning styles, and some are more visual, some are more auditory, and some are, you know, combinations. And so the new content really is a mixture of video, audio, interactive links, really designed to, I think it makes a really interesting flow of information. And so if I'm just getting tired from reading, even though they never have to read for more than about an hour per session, we find that the video and the audio and those interactive links really kind of break it up really nicely, so that people tend to be a little more focused and awake and alert as they're reading through the content. And particularly as we have younger participants who are participating in these discussion courses, millennials who just tend to get more of their content through video and the web, it's a venue that they're more comfortable with. So that's the new course. We're really excited about that element of it. And folks actually access it through a reader called UberFlip, and then they can download it to a PDF from there. But UberFlip really allows it to be used as a magazine reader, and so the links are all live. It's interactive. So it's a very, again, very different experience, at least in terms of going through the content. And then ideally the dialogue is with small groups, although, again, in some cases, some online courses that we're doing could be a little larger than small. So they tend to be anywhere from 100 to 200 folks might participate in one of those online courses.
So let's take a closer look at this. How many sessions are there in your latest course, and how much time commitment could a person have in taking this course?
Sure. So this course is 5 sessions, and so it's looking at really 4 core areas. You know, one is what is the system and kind of understanding of climate change, so making sure everybody's really on the same page. And then moving into kind of just understanding, you know, why in some cases there's some denial around climate change. How do I understand arguments when people present me with an argument about why climate change doesn't exist, but really just how people kind of make decisions about science and other information, not purely based on what the experts are telling us, obviously. And then there's a couple of sessions really devoted to kind of what are people doing out there as part of that inspiration of change, that what's happening on a local basis, on a global basis. You know, all of us want to see that there's some positive action. We get a lot of bad news about climate, but we really need to have the good news to say, hey, to keep us more hopeful, to provide kind of opportunities to say, if they can do it, then I can do it. You know, I'm only one person, but I can be an active participant in this change process. So in terms of the time commitment, typically in a 5-session course, there's usually about 45 minutes to an hour that participants would do in advance of meeting. And that's just to go through the content, maybe fill out some of the, you know, action plans and so forth. And then there's about an hour devoted to the dialogue with your co-participants. And it depends on the venue. Typically, if it's in a workplace, we really work hard to keep it at 1 hour. If it's at home or some other venue and the group decides they want to add food and beverage and, you know, that type of thing and make it more of a social context as well, then we usually recommend it, you know, not lasting longer than an hour and a half. So I'll give you an idea. About 10 hours is about what somebody would devote to participating in the course over the course of 5 to 10 weeks if they're meeting once a week or every other week.
Well, now let me get even a closer picture here. Mm-hmm. Let's say there are 5 in the course, or let's say there are 100 in the course. Do they all need to be in the same room, or could they be in 5 or 100 different towns?
So it all depends on if you're meeting face-to-face. So our face-to-face models typically with 8 to 12 people would be in the same room together, although I've even seen, we've had some businesses whose employees are spread out geographically, and they may use Skype or some other form of video conferencing to do their course. Then, as I mentioned earlier, is we're working with a couple of larger businesses who are spread geographically around the world in some cases, or nationally, or, you know, here throughout North America. And in that case, we're using either WebEx or Links or some other form of conferencing system, to where folks would still do the reading on their own. And in the case of WebEx, we present a little differently than our model in terms of, in this case, we are the presenters, but really the facilitators. We're not trying to be the teachers of this content, but really to facilitate the dialogue. In the case of WebEx, we can use have a verbal conversation with those on the call. And then we try to use whiteboarding and polling to keep people engaged who may not be verbally engaged in the conversation, but they can still participate by typing in an answer or answering a poll. And in that case, we've tried to do it with up to 200 people on a call. So it's a little more scalable for larger organizations.
So if it's an event that you're leading, then you would provide the software, so to speak. But if it's something that somebody in Arizona is leading, then it would be their responsibility to provide Skype or some other way for their people to communicate with each other. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that's good. Well, now, here I am out on the western coast of Iowa. And golly, I'd like to take one of your classes, but I'm not one of your courses, but I'm not sure, you know, who's offering it. Is there any way that I could get connected with a group somewhere else, if not close by, over the internet?
Sure. So you can. There's a couple of ways to do that. As you alluded to earlier, we do have a national network of partner organizations around the country, and if folks would go to our website, which is www.nwei.org, and scroll to the very bottom, they'll see a list of they'll see a link to partner organizations, and then you can see where we have partner organizations and who to contact and a number for that for those folks. The other thing to do is just if you don't have somebody close to you or you just want to give us a call. We really encourage people to give one of our staff a call and just chat about the process and what it might take for you to organize a group with your own friends, either in your neighborhood, your faith community, your workplace. We can certainly walk folks through that process to make it pretty simple and pleasurable and ultimately effective.
Well, now, we'll give your phone number in the show notes for this podcast, but why don't you give it to our listeners slowly?
Sure. It's the phone number for the Northwest Earth Institute is 503-227-2807.
Good. Now, you mentioned the Echo Challenge earlier. Why don't you tell us a little more about an Echo Challenge and how that differs from a course?
Sure. So the Echo Challenge started a number of years ago. I think this will be our sixth year. And it was really designed to be different than the discussion courses for a couple of reasons. One is we knew that there were a whole lot of folks out there who said, "Yeah, I don't really need to talk about it anymore right now. I just want to dive in and do it." So some people are going to want to start with the action and learn by doing, and other people want to first process it a little bit, which is more the discussion course route. So the Eco Challenge is when going back to our change model, it's a different entry point. So it starts at the positive action rather than the shared discovery is where the discussion courses start. So the Eco Challenge, in brief, happens in the last 2 weeks of October. And participants can sign up either as an individual or they can sign up as part of a team. And what you're doing is each individual selects a challenge in one of six categories, so in waste, water, energy, transportation, food, or civic engagement. And the idea is to pick one challenge, not one in each category and not five challenges. Pick one challenge that you really want to focus on for the next 2 weeks of the Eco Challenge. So they go online, create their profile, share with others, here's what my challenge is. And then during the course of the Eco Challenge, it's doing a couple of things, checking back in to say, hey, I met my challenge today. I can get points every time I do that, so there's a little bit of a gamification. You can compete against others or other teams. And then also, in addition to kind of the metrics of I met it or I didn't meet my challenge or I recruited other people and getting points for those kinds of things, I can also share my story about what's working, what's not working, what was the blooper that I had today that, you know, I was trying to be so good and, oops, I was trying to eat only local foods and that chocolate chip cookie, it looked so appealing and I ate it and realized, oh, none of those ingredients are local, even though they might have been organic. So the idea is then to be able to share those stories so that we don't try to feel like we're eco-saints or eco-angels and that we can actually have a little bit of fun with the change process as well. So I think we've had a little over 3,000 people participate each year. This year we're expecting a couple of larger businesses that will be participating with their own challenges, and then we have kind of the public challenge that's free for anybody who wants to participate. And they can see the challenge at www.ecochallenge.org.
Wonderful. So, Mike, do the winners get a Mike Mercer bobblehead doll?
No, that would be kind of an antithesis to what we're trying to do. We don't want you to have something that you don't need, a physical thing, but we do have some fun raffle prizes and so forth with one of our supporters of the Eco Challenge is Organic Valley Foods, and I think they provide a certificate for up to a year's supply of Organic Valley products. So we do try to make, if we're going to give away something, we try to make it something that somebody will really use or is more of an experience rather than a bobblehead that they don't really need to put in their car or on their desk.
That's beautiful, Mike. That's beautiful. So I think you've given us a good picture of the size of the organization, the method. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listener?
Well, I guess the only other thing I would share is, as we were talking about the size of the organization, we've had a little over 160,000 people have participated in our discussion courses over the years. And so we've had a pretty significant collective impact of all of those. So just looking at it from a waste perspective, over 36 million pounds of waste is diverted every year through the actions of our participants, and almost 11,000 homes are taken off the grid every year because of the actions of our participants, and I think almost 800 Olympic-sized swimming pools worth of water is conserved every year because of participants, and then $192 million of dollars remain in our local economy because of actions of our participants who have taken either discussion courses or participated in the Eco Challenge. So we know it works. The model actually does drive people to close that say-do gap and act in ways that are consistent with the values that they espouse.
Wonderful. Well, now, I don't want you to betray any secrets here, Mike, but it would be nice to know what's on the table for the next 5 years with Northwest Earth Institute.
Well, the next 5 years are a couple of fold. One is to continue to leverage some of the successes we're having with some larger organizations. Our motto is also kind of moving from organizing the converted to converting the organized. So it's kind of, without being evangelical about it, but the idea is, how do we work with larger networks where the opportunity to scale change is that much greater? So we're going to continue to work in that space and kind of beyond really the work we've done over the last year. So that'll be one. Eco Challenge, we're starting to do some private sites with that as well. So for larger organizations who say, hey, we really want this to be focused on our employees, and so the stories that our employees are sharing with each other are really about our organization and building a sense of camaraderie around our colleagues. So we're doing some more of that work. Technology is continuing to play a role within the organization. We believe firmly in the face-to-face model. How technology helps us connect larger networks of people together is something we'll continue to explore. In particular, it's just as demographics change, not only in terms of age, but also kind of racial demographics change in our culture, and what does that look like for us as an organization in terms of who we're reaching out to, who we're engaging, and kind of the stories we're telling, how many people are really included in those stories. So I think you'll see some more work in that space as well, and kind of in the social justice and racial equity areas.
Well, that's very encouraging, Mike. Thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much, Jerry. Really appreciate the time.
You've been listening to my conversation with Mike Mercer, Executive Director of Northwest Earth Institute. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org or simplelivingworks@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Well, I have some news. We've made a change of focus for the Simple Living Works blog. I'm somewhat proud of my reputation as a deal maker. I bring people together. I like to collaborate with colleagues and especially with like-minded people. I've served more than as a consolidator and editor than as a writer. I've compiled and published numerous collections such as Worship Alternatives and Spirit of Simplicity, Quotes and Art. In this light, the Simple Living Works blog will begin to focus more on others' efforts for simple living. The blog will be posted at least once a week, the first week of the month, on Simple Living Works e-news, which is emailed separately to some 8,000 subscribers. Since Simple Living Works podcast is released on the 1st and the 15th of each month, the weekly will highlight each episode. Other blogs will highlight the work of others, including links and brief summaries, but not reposts of articles. Since part of the mission of Simple Living Works is to encourage people of faith to celebrate responsibly, the new format will include a brief listing of upcoming alternate celebrations, drawn primarily from Simple Living Works blog and site. Those added to the Simple Living Works Treasury of Celebrations since its publication are marked new. Your feedback on this plan is welcome. Well, I received a response from Teresa Baustian about my podcast interview with Interfaith Power and Light. And Teresa said, "I have never before looked forward to issuance of an encyclical. I've never even read one during the same decade in which it was issued. But I'm so excited about this one, I'd even stand in line to get it, if that's what it took." And of course, she's referring to Pope Francis' encyclical on climate change. Well, coming up in episode 49, I've scheduled an interview with Janet Lewers of SimpleLiving.com and author of the popular The Simple Living Guide and Simple Loving. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want, with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and to our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Please remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which is part of the One Earth Project, at iTunes. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, then click About. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye. Peace. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive lifestyle. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, "Live simply that others may simply live," as our closing theme song proclaims. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of living more with less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre, and I've discussed those standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Mm-hmm. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.